Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, October 26, 2009. I'm Sam Minter. As usual, Yvonne Bo is with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Yeah, hello. I'm still here. You know, Sam asked me whether I had a list of topics, and I had one of these ridiculously exhausting weeks. Getting back, I went to Brazil again, as you know, I've gone, I don't know how many countless times in the last couple of years that we've recorded the show. On my return flight this time, I did what about a couple of years ago I unsuccessfully tried to do, which was flights were full going straight back to Miami, so I was going to fly through JFK. Okay? I don't know if you recall, I think it was on my birthday about a year and a half ago, I tried flying through JFK, and we wound up with a mid-air problem, which forced us to return back to the airport, and I never got to fly that flight. But this time, flight got off on time. We flew to JFK, and then I changed planes and I got to Miami. But I calculated the amount of time that it took from the time I took a cab at 5 p.m. local time in Brazil to the time I got home the next day. It was 21 hours, okay, to travel.
Yep.
Now, 21 hours to return, add 12 hours to get there, 33 hours of travel for a three-day business trip. And I'm going on another trip on Tuesday. Yeah, I'm just kind of wiped out, you know?
I understand completely. I mean, I've never, you know, I had one job out of all my history of jobs that had some amount of travel, and it was still like much, much less than you travel. And, you know, I could see doing it, you know, once a month could be kind of fun, whatever, but like being constantly away from home, I don't know. It's tough. I respect you for being able to do it, you know, because I don't know. It seems like that would.
I still don't understand. I mean, and the one thing is that I come back home and I made a promise that I don't come home and I've met other people that do this a lot, and they come home and they typically they'll just go home and go to sleep. Okay. And their spouses are upset because they don't help anything around the house. You know, you've been gone the whole week. And so, you know, yesterday I got here at noon. You know, I left the prior day local time at 3. Okay, you know, I started traveling. I got here home at noon. And then I have a little tech tidbit I got to tell you about what happened to me when I landed at JFK, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my wife wanted to go out yesterday. And I didn't go to sleep, and we did go out, and we got home at 2 in the morning.
And so, meanwhile, you've been awake however long.
Yeah, who knows? Lost track. And so, you know, now, thankfully, our fiscal year ends soon. Now, that doesn't really mean that I will not be traveling. Unfortunately, they've decided that I've got 3 meetings scheduled that involve travel already in November, and usually I try not to travel in November, and I've got, I don't know, you know, I will tell you that I've been contemplating switching jobs. I'm actually trying to get another job where I can just not have to travel this much. I said not have to travel this much, not necessarily not travel,
but
just not this much, yes, because I've been doing this grind now for a couple of years, and it gets tiresome after a while. But I'll tell you the little thing that happened to me when I got to JFK, which you'll find interesting.
Yes,
okay,
do.
I have a Windows mobile phone, and I got to Kennedy, and I signed up for a global entry program, which allows you to bypass all the immigration checks. You get to a machine, and you went through a I went through security screening already, and I paid a $100 fee, and I had a background check and stuff, and they've approved me as a you know, as a traveler, a trusted traveler pretty much for immigration purposes. And when I get to the airport, I can bypass everybody in the line. There's a couple of kiosks where I put my passport. I look straight ahead into this video camera, records my picture. I put down my four fingers on my right hand, reads my fingerprints they have in store. Okay. I answer the immigration questions on a computer screen. It's already got my flight information because right now the airlines transmit that, so it knows what flight I arrived and everything. It prints a little receipt. Takes like 20 seconds. I walk past the immigration officer. I show them the receipt, and they're like, yep, go ahead, go. And so I thankfully signed up for that because that's actually wonderful. You know, it's like, you know, just screw these lines. I just go through what I just get out. But I passed that, and I get to my connecting gate. Okay, I had about an hour, a little over an hour for the connection, and I get there, and I went and fired up my phone. Okay, I'm not sure why the hell I fired up my phone because it was 6 something in the morning, and I wasn't going to call my wife. I called my wife at 6 something in the morning; she'll shoot me. so I go and I'm like, I fire up the phone. And I normally turn off my Bluetooth when I travel because I usually use the Bluetooth normally in my car. My car has Bluetooth,
right, right.
And, you know, it just connects to it. The moment I saw this strange light saying that some Bluetooth connection was trying to get to my phone. It connects to something, and this thing is trying to pump a file into my phone.
Okay.
Immediately at JFK. Now, remember, I'm in a waiting area lounge of a flight at 6 in the morning, and I'm like,
so you figure some other guy sitting in the waiting area or something is trying to push
yeah,
it to
yeah,
your
but,
phone.
But at first I noticed it's got to be the name of the file. It's like, I don't know, it's a giveaway. It must be some kind of Bluetooth virus going around for Windows Mobile.
Okay. I haven't heard about this.
Okay. I mean, I actually had heard about this, about a couple of Bluetooth. I think I've experienced it a few years ago on a Sony Ericsson phone that used the Symbian OS. But there was a Symbian virus that connected through Bluetooth. But yeah, it looked like a, you know, and I went and I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like, let me not accept this. And I'm like, just, you know, trying to desperately just find my Bluetooth and off. So I turned off the Bluetooth. But yeah, I mean, I actually have, I, you know, this is not the first time I've experienced that, but I've seen, you know, I mean, I leave my Bluetooth undiscoverable. So, you know, so you can find a device and, you know, try to send you a file, and if you accidentally hit yes, you're fucked.
Very
you
know, nice.
You're going to have a virus on your phone. So, so just an aware note to people that if you're not, you know, if you're not going to be using Bluetooth for a while, you know, just turn it off, okay? You know, just in case, so you don't get hit with that. So you tell me you've never. I mean, you've had a. I don't know. Do you normally have your Bluetooth enabled on your phone?
No,
I don't know.
Honestly, like when I first got phones with Bluetooth, you know, I tried to do the whole Bluetooth headset thing, and it always
oh,
ended
bullshit.
Up being a pain in the ass to me, you know, like, you know,
you got to charge the damn headset.
When it worked okay. But yeah, you had to charge the headset. And what was happening to me all the time, you know, certainly on my old Trio pre-iPhone, was that it would forget the connection between them all the time. And
oh,
I'd have to go in.
And
I don't know what it was. And then, like, with the iPhone, it was better, but still, it would occasionally lose the marrying between the two. And I eventually realized it was when I let the headset completely die. And then I had
battery.
To plug it in again.
And that's the one thing about the fucking headset. You got to charge the fucking headset, and you got to charge the phone. And it's not like, you know, it's not like the headset is part of the phone. So, you know, usually they'll have a separate charger, and then you got to
yep.
carry another charger, and then that's a pain in my fucking ass. I you know, I remember I did get a Bluetooth headset years ago, and I used it for a little bit, and then I was like, oh, fuck this. This
yeah,
is just
so,
not
so,
worth the
so bottom line, I tried it a few times. I got, yeah, well, more than a few times. I tried it for a while, and then eventually I got frustrated with it. And then once I had the iPhone, you know, And a lot of people don't like the headphones that come with the damn thing, but I like the integrated headset on them, and I like it better than holding the damn phone to my ear. So pretty much, if I'm talking on my cell phone, I've got
still
my headset plugged
headphones.
In. And I've got the wired headset
in my ears in stereo.
And and it's not really stereo because the phone connection isn't, but it's in both ears. And I like it. It works well. They can hear me. I can hear them. You know, I don't have to worry about syncing anything. I just plug in my little headset. The biggest problem I have with it is usually my headset's in my pocket and it's all tangled. So I get a phone call and I'm like, hold on, I'm untangling the cord. Anyway.
Hold on. No, so that was my thing. I just, just a note of caution to people who normally use Bluetooth, to be aware that does happen. It's not the first time that I've seen something like this almost happen to me. So I just, be careful out there when when you're using Bluetooth.
And with that, let's take a break, and we'll be right back with more.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back, and since we started by talking about Yvonne's travels, I figured we can make the transition into the little transportation incident that happened earlier this week. Yvonne, do you know which one I'm talking about?
The pilots who apparently fell asleep. Absolutely, of course.
Given your predilection for air flight, Yvonne, why don't you give a summary of what happened and then what your thoughts are on it?
Okay, it was a flight that, if I remember correctly, it was coming from San Diego to Minneapolis, Northwest Airlines flight. About an hour before they were supposed to land in Minneapolis, air traffic controllers had trouble raising them on the VHF. They kept trying. They tried different things. They got Northwest on the line. Aircraft have a text. They have a text communication system called ACARS that they could relay messages to the plane. Those messages didn't go through. They started thinking about scrambling. A couple of fighter jets. They asked a couple of aircraft that were nearby to see if they could raise them on their radios. Apparently, after a whole bunch of effort, once like they were well past, I guess they were like 15 to 30 minutes past Minneapolis, all of a sudden they responded. They turned around. The control tower was a little bit, leery whether there was terrorism involved or not, so they asked them to do a series of maneuvers to see if they would just follow exactly what they were being asked to do. They did, and so then they landed. When they landed, police officers came on the flight, told all the crew to all the passengers to stay. And they were like saying that, we were enthralled in a heavy conversation and we just forgot. flight attendants apparently tried to rap on the door and tried to get them. A number of passengers figured out that something must have been wrong because they were way over on time and
The first reports I heard said that the passengers had no idea, but a few passengers did figure it out.
I
figured if I was on this damn flight, I would know something was wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're scheduled to arrive at 8:05, you usually start a descent like 20 to 30 minutes prior. I mean, you haven't started descending, and, you're 15 minutes past your arrival time, and you haven't started descending, and you're looking out the window, and you don't see anything, especially when you're heading into a major city. Well, then, yeah. But actually, they did. The problem is that they overflew fucking Minneapolis, so I'm sure some of the passengers recognize some of the stuff down there. They're like, what the fuck is going on? Why are we flying straight? So, and apparently one of the flight attendants were banging on the door trying to get their attention, and that didn't work either. Apparently, the investigation is a little bit hampered due to the fact that the Northwest Airlines plane had an old flight recorder and only recorded the last 30 minutes of the conversation.
Which means that everything that was recorded was after they were back in contact and blah, blah, blah.
Right. But, of course, you know, who knows what the hell they were talking about. So,
if they were really talking or what was going on. I mean, yeah, some people are like, oh, they must have fallen asleep. They're like, we didn't fall asleep. We were just having this conversation. And
listen, it's happened where, you know, this is not the – look, if they fell asleep, it's not the first time. There was an incident with an Aloha Airlines aircraft sometime, I believe it was last year, where the pilots, both of them, fell asleep, and they all flew Honolulu, okay? And they did. They just fell asleep. And, you know, on international flights, mind you, that doesn't – the procedures are different. Like, you know, the flight I just took, it's a 10-hour flight. They actually have – it's a 777. It's a two-man crew that flies a plane, but they actually have a third extra pilot, and they actually rotate and take naps, okay? Right. On a 777, there's actually there's a crew – well, they've – yeah, actually, most of the 777s, they have a crew rest area with beds and everything, so the pilot can go and, like, the crew, they can go and take a nap. But you know, not on this, you know, this was an A320, and this crew, apparently, you know, the one bizarre thing about it, they had a 14-hour rest period between the, you know, prior to their 14 or 17 hours of rest in between. So, I don't know, you know, I got to tell you,
here's the thing. You know, okay, let's say they were having this animated conversation. Now, when these communications come in from various things, not to mention like when they pass certain flight points and stuff, aren't there all kinds of like audible warnings and things that go off?
Not necessarily. I mean, not unless they were doing something. Not unless two things were happening. One is that they approached another aircraft by mistake.
Well, right now.
Or
no, but I mean, even like when you get the call over the radio, doesn't it ding or something?
Well, I mean, if they had their radios on, I mean, they should have been able to hear. Now, of course, another thing is that they were saying, which even if they fell asleep, which could be true, is that they had the wrong frequency on the radio.
Okay.
Now that's very well possible. Okay. And if they had the wrong frequency, that they did fall asleep anyway, but they were on the wrong frequency, so therefore they didn't hear anybody raising them on the radio.
Right.
You know, apparently the pilots that approached that got closer went and tried different frequencies to try to raise them. Okay. And that's how you know.
Eventually make contact? Was it just on the normal frequency? Like, did they like wake up?
Another aircraft that was close by was able to raise them on the radio.
On a different frequency, or where they were supposed to be listening?
On a different frequency.
Okay.
So, now the mistake may have started with them being on the wrong radio frequency in the first place. I have put my radio on the wrong radio frequency. So that's something that happens. But I'll tell you that if you're under right frequency, I mean, but you'll notice that. I mean, you're approaching. I mean, you're trying to get to the, you know, you're trying to get to a certain location. You know, usually, you know, from the dispatch gives them specific instructions for their flight. It gives them the entire flight plan, frequencies along the way, et cetera, and so forth. Everything that happens on that damn flight, all the way from takeoff to landing. If you're awake and aware, you will know if all of a sudden you haven't heard a damn thing on the radio or you're doing something, you'll be like, oh shit, I'm on the wrong frequency. I mean, you'll fucking notice that. Okay. But I think that they did fall asleep.
Right. I mean, it seems like the only thing that really makes sense here. I don't know, but
yeah.
You know, but on these, you mentioned this is an older plane. Is this one of the cases where, you know, on the newer planes, the plane itself knows the whole flight plan, knows when you're supposed to start descending, knows all of this crap?
Well, this one did.
It did?
Well, no, this it isn't. I mean, even though it's it's not entirely completely old. This was an A320. It's a pretty modern aircraft. And, you know, look, if they had programmed everything all the way in, they could have programmed everything all the way down to landing on the runway, and the plane would have done it, to be quite honest with you. Now, the truth of the matter is that when you're that far out, normally you don't know which runway you're landing because you don't know the current weather at the moment you're landing. So normally most people won't program all the way there because that changes. And so, you know, but, I mean, theoretically you could. And if you did and you didn't change it, I mean, the fucking plane would have just kept going, you know, and I'm sure that the traffic controllers would have been going berserk because this fucking plane's making an approach and it's not answering to any, you know, to any calls on the radio.
But I was just wondering in terms of, like, if he had the route programmed in, it seems like it would, you know, I know that the big alarms are just if you're, like, approaching traffic or you're plummeting or something, but, like, you'd think there'd be an alarm of some sort that would go off if you just deviated from the programmed route.
There should have been something going off that they reached the last waypoint that they had punched in.
Right. That's what I'm
saying. But it's not a big alarm because that's not such a big deal. Okay.
Right. Normally it wouldn't be.
Yeah. The fact that you went past the last waypoint, you know, the computer thinks, okay, you know, well, this is the last waypoint you programmed, you know, we'll just advise you and that's it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, so, I don't know. I mean, everything went fine in the end. So I guess.
Everything
went
fine. Nobody got hurt. You know, nothing happened. You know, but definitely a little bit of a bizarre incident, to say the least.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder about, okay, maybe the people are saying, like, you know, just fully automate the damn plane and let's get rid of the pilot entirely. Maybe they got something to that idea.
I mean,
There are other problems there.
But listen, that isn't such a crazy, far-fetched thing.
No, we're very close. Technologically, we can do that.
Completely execute a landing by itself was an L-1011. I mean, it was north of 30 years ago, for Pete's sake. But the truth is that even right now, on most flights, I mean, you do take the pilot a significant amount out of the equation. I mean, that is.
For that matter, you could do it the same way they do Predator drones. You could have all the pilots sitting in an office somewhere.
No. I'd like my pilot to be on the fucking plane on that. Okay, with me. Okay, all right. Not some fucking guy sitting in an office driving the fucking plane, okay?
Okay. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll be back with another topic in a second.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music. For a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, so let's see. I got a couple of things on my list. You know, I got to admit, once again, none of them are really all that, like, heart-stringing to me. We got the healthcare thing sort of moving towards a conclusion at its, you know, pace. You know, the latest thing that, it's interesting there.
Did you get your thing for open enrollment, you know, since this is normally the time of the year for that?
I think our open enrollment is later, but we, because I had a life change event or whatever the fuck they're called.
Right.
We added Alex to my plans and stuff. But, you know, I'll be honest, on open enrollment kind of stuff, you know, on the day I started with the company, I picked an option, and I haven't looked at it again since. You know, and I know
there were a lot of big changes this year for most people in open enrollment. I will tell you that I got my material, and I was my plans got a lot more expensive than they were. Okay.
Okay.
All the options. Okay. A lot more out-of-pocket expenses. I mean, it's not like it's happened like this is a new thing, but this year, what they did was they kind of gave you like all of a sudden my deductible is like almost like triple what I used to have.
Ouch.
My average deductibles. But then what they did is that they gave you cash. Like, they allowed this amount of cash which you could apply towards medical care during the year. It was just some strange thing. I know that it's that I made
you're
the calculation.
You're talking about the medical savings account?
No. Separately from the medical savings account.
Okay.
What they did is that normally, you know, how they would, you would pay for, you'd go to, I used to go to a doctor's visit. I would pay a copay, and they would pay the difference. Now, this year, what they did is, okay, what we're going to do is that we're going to give you below your $1,500 deductible, and this is the thing, these plans are so complicated. I don't even understand some of these deductibles that they talk about. But what I understood was that instead of me being paying this little deductible and the other amount, they would put $1,000 in this pool where I would get to use that money until it runs out or something, and then it's just kind of like very strange. Bottom line is that I was reading about this, and it said that on average, the average person will just cost you more money. That's just the bottom line. But I know my premiums went up. I know that part went up. I know that it said that you got to put more money out of pocket. I don't know. It's just unrelenting how this is going with how the prices keep going up.
So
I guess was my point.
So back to developments in Washington. The latest interesting wrinkles from the last few days here are basically that in the Senate, Harry Reid believes he has 60 votes for a compromise position that has a public option with a state-by-state opt-out. So basically the governor of a state or the state legislature, not sure exactly how it would work, but the state can decide, you know, we don't want this in our state. And he thinks he has 60 votes for that. The White House is, I don't think you really have 60 votes on that. I don't really believe that. We want to go for the triggered public option, which Senator Olympia Snowe, a Republican, has said she would vote for as the one Republican potentially in play to actually vote for any of this stuff. And so you've basically had the Senate Democrats actually running to the left of Obama on this, and Obama apparently chasing the Republican compromise rather than trying to do something where he just makes sure all of the Democrats are on board, because if they can get all of the Democrats on board, they can ram this thing through.
Okay.
And I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic there, but I find it interesting that the role the administration is choosing to play is once again that of trying to... They're trying to behind the scenes find some sort of compromise that'll get the people on board. They're not going out there and, you know, doing the sort of overt leadership saying, okay, this is what we want and we're going to push for it and we're going to twist arms and we're going to get that done. They're doing something a lot more, I don't know if subtle is the right word. It doesn't feel like the right word, but they're not jumping out on the forefront to push something. They're still in the mode of trying to, you know, sort of corral something behind the scenes a little bit. Let's see what these people accept. Let's see what these people will accept. Let's try to get these people on board, that kind of thing. And, you know, I don't know. I think it might be a way that has a stronger shot of actually getting something passed, but it also seems, it just doesn't seem like the kind of leadership you expect here. I don't know. What are your thoughts on any of this? Is it all just, I don't know.
I feel like they're reorganizing deck chairs on a Titanic. I mean, I don't know. You know, everybody, I kind of feel like, I know that there's, look, there's many different ways to try to accomplish this. Almost every solution is going to piss off a certain number of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, you know, I don't know.
I mean, I'll go back to what I said on healthcare months ago when we first started talking about this, which is, it looks to me like they will figure out a way to get something done. But the key...
Well, I think that the key is, will. I'm sure something's passing.
Well, no, right. Well, but I think the key here is the agenda now is focused around getting something passed as opposed to actually solving the problems. And so I'm scared of what comes out of the process, you know, and yeah, maybe it'll kick things forward a little bit, but it doesn't sound like any of the core root issues are really being addressed. It's more along the lines of, let's address this thing here, and let's not try to ruffle too many feathers, you know.
I'll digress a little bit on that. Based on what I've read, I mean, there's been a number of root things that they've tried to address, the increased costs and other things. Yeah, I think that they've tried to address some of that. That's the way that they were able to get, the duty accounting that it came in, that it should be relatively light on the deficit over the 10 years of the program, and with increased numbers of people covered.
Some people have pointed out that the legislation that created like Medicare and stuff during the Great Society and even the New Deal stuff, but especially in the Johnson administration, what actually came out of that was a lot less than what was being pushed for. You know, and some people at the time called it a failure of the process because they didn't get all this stuff. But what they did get, you know, has had profound implications for many, many people for the decades since. So, you know.
Well, if you take Medicare, okay? I'll tell you something. I know a lot of people on Medicare, okay? I've asked those people. I've gone flat out.
Well,
okay.
It's everyone over 65.
Yeah. You ask those people, since everybody says how bad government health care is, I went and I asked, okay.
How's your Medicare?
Okay, you know, how's your Medicare? How much does it suck? You want me to take it away? He's like, are you fucking kidding me? You know, that's everybody's reaction. I have yet to meet a person on Medicare that would like it taken away. I've yet to meet one.
Right.
So, hey... Yeah, you know, I don't know. You know, that's the one thing I hear so many people complaining about government-run healthcare, you know, and how government can fuck everything up. Well, I guess not. They can't. You know, they don't fuck everything up because everybody I meet that's on Medicare likes it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess we'll see what comes out of the process. And I mean, the thing that I guess I was getting to with the whole Johnson thing was, even if what comes out of this process seems like a half measure and not everything that's needed and blah, blah, blah,
it will have profound implications over the long run.
Even the smallest thing will have profound implications over the long run. And, you know, and yes, you know, they're not going and ripping apart the entire existing system and replacing it with something brand new burning everything else to the ground, but you know that has all kinds of risks to it too. Obviously, I like burning things to the ground.
Especially the burning part.
Yeah, you know, fire is cool. Anyway, time for another break, and we'll be back in a moment with something else.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel. The Monster's Bride Questions the Motives of Her Creator, by Tiffany Midge. Those plugs jutting out from her neck, she's curious, what are they for? The fiery thoroughfare of crisscrossing scars from temple to jaw, brow to ear, should she look for something implicit there? One eye brown, pilfered from an orange-haired prostitute in Potter's Field, the other fixed askew in her head, a child's like new ornament. Is he a misogynist? Did his mother abandon him? One arm, the muscular backhoe of a field worker's, connected to the jagged star of a hand. She wonders, is she expected to work? The vagina, intact and as pretty as postcard sunset. Should she ruin it for him? The abdomen owns the legacy of multiple births. A miller's wife spitting out babes like peas. Is there room to grow more? What hair that's left is black as licorice, sparse on her scalp like a locust-run crop. Does he secretly love his sister? Her dresses, hung in the closet like sides of beef, taffetas, crinolines, colors of esplanade sherbets. Should she dance for him? At night, locked in her chambers, she hears desire's low growl, smells iron, lust, rain. What does it mean? Is it for her?
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org, with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay.
Well, there wasn't, go back to another topic. I don't know if you saw this in the news,
yes.
But there's an enormous explosion in San Juan, Puerto Rico, like a couple of days ago. I don't know if you caught this.
It was vaguely on CNN. Remember hearing, I didn't click through or look at it. So what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. Outside, not very far from, I mean, in the metro area of San Juan, there's this very large gasoline storage facility that also included a refinery. Now, the refinery was built by Gulf Petroleum many, many years ago. As a matter of fact, I used to know the general manager of the refinery many, many years ago. Good friends of my uncle. That refinery, Gulf Petroleum, got bought by Chevron. Chevron, in order to pay for the debt, sold it to I believe he's an Israeli entrepreneur, like many years ago. He ran the refinery for a while, and then, because refineries, because of EPA and, other costs associated with trying to keep it environmentally clean and violations, whatever, he pretty much shut down the refinery, but still ran the fuel storage, okay? Puerto Rico, this last month, there's been a lot of controversy because there's a general strike, because there's been a lot of layoffs of government employees, because the budget deficit in Puerto Rico has gotten so bad that the government pretty much is getting close to not being able to borrow any more money from anybody. Nobody wants to loan any money, more money to the Puerto Rico government. So they've been having to, they've start firing public employees, period. That's there's no other way out. Just have to start firing them. Just to give a perspective of how many public employees are in Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico, with 4 million people, has the same number of public employees as the state of California.
Okay.
There's 300,000 fucking public employees in Puerto Rico.
A little government heavy there.
Yes. Okay, just a tad. So, some major layoffs are needed. So anyway, this is a general strike and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, like about 3 days ago, sometime in the middle of the night, kaboom. I mean, this explosion, they registered an earthquake. The explosion was so strong that I guess the National Weather Service, the one that records earthquakes, they registered an earthquake about 3.0. Geological Survey, 3.0 on the Richter scale when the thing went off. There were 20 storage tanks. I think like two-thirds of them exploded. It caught fire. I mean, the fireball was just enormous. The smoke plume, it could be seen from like 20-30 miles out. You could see it. The explosion was so strong. It shattered windows like almost like 10 miles away.
Excellent.
That's how strong it was. I mean, it was just insane how strong the explosion was. I mean, it woke up practically everybody in the city, okay, when it happened. I mean, the people that lived close by thought it was the end of the world. I mean, they said that there were houses that were only like half a mile away, doors were blown off their houses, you know, shit like that. It was just nuts. It was insane. They've spent like the last 3 or 4 days trying to extinguish the fire. I think that they finally said that maybe today, after the fourth day, they were finally able to extinguish the fire. There was some graffiti scrawled on a tunnel somewhere in San Juan that suggests that some people are saying, like, they suggest, like, they were taking, you know, responsibility for it. They don't know yet if it was sabotage or not. It wouldn't surprise me if it was sabotage. Now, it wouldn't surprise me either that if it was, you know, just because that place, the owner that's had it, he's had a record of just being very sloppy with the maintenance of the place, that it's just, you know, there was an accident as well. It's possible, but I find it difficult to believe. I mean, but they had such light security. I think they told me that there were 11 employees on site at the time of the explosion. You've got about 15 to 20 enormous fuel tanks, and there's only 11 people watching over this. I mean, shit, anybody could have broken in and done anything. So anyway, so I don't know. We'll see. The ATF, the FBI, President Obama declared
emergency.
Declared a disaster area, so they could get help because of the damage. I mean, because it did cause damage. I mean, the explosion was enormous. I mean, this thing's it's unbelievable how hard the explosion was. So there were pieces of major highway shut down for 2 days. It's a mess. It's a mess. But we'll see. I don't know. We'll
you know, we haven't had any fun like that around Seattle lately.
Now, I still remember the other city that had something like that happen was in London. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, but the fuel storage near Heathrow Airport blew up. And that was also wreaked a lot of havoc in London. I got to tell you, I haven't seen, I spoke to a couple of people who said, I mean, they were just, you know, one person thought, I know somebody that they live in a condo and they thought there was a downstairs neighbor fucking around or something because it felt like, you know, they lived like 20 miles away from the place and they were just like, all of a sudden this fucking thing, they said, what is our neighbor like? Were they doing work with hammers or something in the middle of the night? I mean, what the hell was that? You know, and then, you know, they saw the smoke outside. So,
okay, very good.
So anyway,
we're a little short in this segment, but let's take a break and then come back for one last topic. Okay, we're back. Yvonne, I am going to give you a choice of topics. Okay. Topic possibility
number one.
The new IMAX. Possibility number two, the potential loss of historical information that's being held digitally instead of physically. Topic number three, the net neutrality debate going through the FCC and what's going on with that. Topic number four, the White House versus Fox News. Okay, those are my four. Which one would you like?
I'll go with
would
number
you like
two.
Number two, online history.
Yes.
So just to for anybody who's not familiar with this issue, this has come up a few times. People have brought this up as issues, but basically what it is with everybody storing so much of their information online, or not even online, like on the cloud and the internet kind of stuff, but digitally on their computers at home and things like that, there's a lot of worry amongst historians that 100 years from now, they're going to go back to try to analyze what was going on now. And they're not going to have the kind of records that they had, because people used to keep paper, people used to keep records, their photographs, letters, etc. And, you know, they kept them in a little shoebox or whatever. And when they died, their kids got them and stuff like that. You know, whereas in this digital age, you know, first of all, let's say, you know, email. If you're using a service like Gmail or something like that, unless you've made arrangements, you know, you die, what happens to your mail? Can anybody find it? Can anybody look through it? Can anybody see that? You know, there are some mechanisms with court orders, but it's not just like you go into the shoebox in your dad's closet and find his letters. It's much more complex than that. You know, there, if you've got all of your...
I keep a local copy of all my mail, for example.
Not, lots of people
don't.
Lots of people. I certainly do. I'm paranoid about having everything in multiple locations. But lots of people don't. And then then even if you got it on your local computer, let's say, you know, if you got all your pictures, all your personal documents and stuff,
I got
on
all
your
my
computer,
pictures locally copied on my computer too.
You know,
it's kind of like, you know, Facebook, for example.
Yeah.
You know, people that use Facebook, and I see a lot of people that believe that Facebook is a good storage for their photos, and I'm like, no. First of all, the quality that you can upload is not that great. Second of all, Facebook does not have, as far as I know, a robust data center infrastructure that can guarantee that your data is safe.
Well,
are they making any commitments that they will store any of your information indefinitely?
I mean, and presumably they have some mechanisms in place, but it is not considered a sort of the kind of service.
Well, look at what happened
with
Sidekick fiasco a couple of weeks ago.
The bottom line is you just don't know. And also, there's a general assumption on these kinds of services that this is a mostly ephemeral data. You're using it at the moment, and then it's gone. There's not an assumption that, hey, it's important to permanently archive this stuff forever and make sure that it doesn't get lost. So yeah, there's that. There's losing access to accounts like that. There's also stuff like, and here another example here, and I was just thinking about this earlier today, GeoCities is finally shutting down. And for those of you who don't remember, GeoCities was like from the early 90s, something, the mid-90s?
Yes.
Like one of the big sort of free web hosting things where if you wanted to get up a website, in exchange for them putting ads on your website, you could get free hosting space and stuff like that. It at some point along got bought by Yahoo. Yahoo is now shutting it down. And I forget the exact date, any day now. They're just going to turn everything off. If you've got anything up there, it's just gone. So I was thinking, you know, our friend Al had a GeoCities site. There is the Internet Wayback Machine, archive.org or whatever, and there are a number of people who are trying to make attempts to save this kind of information. But, you know, bottom line is, Yahoo ran this thing for 10 years, whatever, and now they're shutting it off.
They delete everything, and that's it.
That's it. Yeah. And because they don't want to spend the time or money to maintain this crap.
It takes a lot of fucking storage. It takes a lot of procedures. You got to fucking keep this stuff to make it available when people want to look at it. I mean, it costs money.
And so, I was thinking, you know, our friend Al had a GeoCities website at one point. You know, it has some interesting stuff up there, you know. And as far as I know, he hasn't updated the damn thing in 15 years or something. But
what the hell?
And I haven't checked it in a while. I actually have it on my list of things
now. I thought it was GeoCities.
I could be wrong. But I have it on my list of things to do at this point. Go see if Al's website is still there, and if it is, suck down a copy.
What the hell was the link?
I don't know.
I
have it somewhere. I'll find it. But anyway, you know, the point is, you know, this is going to go poof. Now, I don't know what, you know, our friend Al has in his future, but, you know, let's say he does something really important in the future or newsworthy or something like that, and people want to look into his history and what, you know, it's just not going to be there. Whereas if he'd published a book or something, there'd be physical copies lying around and someone would have one. This website, it, you know, unless someone actively decides to go make a copy of it and do something with it, gone. There'd be no record. And yep. One of the examples that came up is just within the last couple of weeks, a movie surfaced, just a few seconds long, of Anne Frank. You know, of the Diary of Anne Frank. She was looking out a window while a wedding party was passing down the street underneath her house. And it is the only known archival footage of Anne Frank. There's still pictures, but this is the only known moving video of her. And it was found because, you know, the people who were getting married, you know, made this movie, and it got passed down through the generations or whatever. And someone realized recently, hey, wait, look at that in that window right there. Is that Anne Frank? And if that had been, you know, a YouTube video, and we're talking 60 years later, I mean, YouTube's fun and all, but does anybody really believe that YouTube's going to be there in 60, 70 years? You know,
Given what I've seen, I will tell you what. Given what I've seen,
some of this stuff will stay forever.
Google manages servers and information. I highly doubt it. I mean, look. I was a little bit, to say the least, surprised as to how Google manages their data center. It is definitely not designed to be a robust place where information will never be lost. Okay.
Well, right. I mean, here's the thing. You know, in many of these applications, it's not considered like this isn't bank records. This isn't people's money. This is something where if it goes away, oh well. You know, the user will re-upload it or something like that. And the key is also like the things that are really, really popular. Okay, someone's going to make a copy of that, and those will be around forever. I mean, that stupid little video of the dog on the skateboard or whatever is going to be with us for thousands of years, you know. But, you know, the things that are, from a historical point of view, are interesting are the things that nobody knows are important at the time. You know, like some kid uploading something that they're doing right now that 30 years from now ends up as president. You know, nobody right now knows that this stuff is relevant in any way. So, but years from now it will be. And the difference with the digital stuff isn't that, it's simply that because, like you said, it takes time and money and whatever to keep this stuff active, and not only that, to upgrade the formats. I mean, like, you know, like we were talking a number of weeks back about like the tapes of the first moon landing that got written over. But even if they hadn't been written over, there were the only machines that could read them were 40-year-old tape drives. You know, and so like the whereas meanwhile you can pick up a 500-year-old book or whenever the first Gutenberg Bibles were produced or whatever, and you just pick it up and you can read it.
That's right.
You know, but if you try to take I could go into my closet right now and find, or at least my storage space, and find some discs from my VIC 20 or Commodore 64 from the 80s.
Yeah,
I would have a hell of a fucking time. You know,
getting anything from those.
There might be information that I would find interesting on those, but if I really wanted to read anything off them, first of all, the magnetic material may have deteriorated to the point where it's not readable anyway. Even if it does, I would need to get, and I know there are hobbyists out there who could probably get that stuff out for me, but it would be a major pain in the ass. It's not like I could pick up the disc and read it.
Let me give you something that happened, okay? Real. I still on my home computer have files that I've written all the way back to college. I have all of that. You know, all the information of all the papers and everything that I saved on my computer from high school, that's all gone, okay? Mm-hmm. That computer died. I don't have access to that. But I've got everything since I started college. But here's the problem. I used to use MacWrite in college. MacWrite does not run on the current Mac OS.
Nope.
And I don't have a copy of MacWrite anymore, as far as I know. And I remember that I tried to open those MacWrite files with some other application. I couldn't fucking read them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I'm sure that there's some hobbyists and somebody out there, whatever, that can get access to them. But all of a sudden, I realized, holy fuck, I've saved all these damn documents. I can't read any of them.
I'll give you another example. In the early 90s, whatever computer I was on, or I guess in the mid 90s, probably whatever computer.
A laptop in the early 90s.
No, I had a laptop that died, and I lost the stuff from that. But no, mid 90s, I had a computer. It was a Macintosh, but disk drives were really small.
Mac, yep.
I had a lot of stuff. I used this program called Disk Doubler that would basically automatically compress all the files on the disk. Okay, and I believe it was actually made by the same people who make stuff
Kinectix.
Stuff it and stuff.
Yep.
But the files aren't compatible. And I found this out later because I kept all of these little files that were compressed using this thing. Stuff it expander can't open it. I haven't been able to find anything that can open these damn files. Presumably the original Disk Doubler software that I had, 10 years ago could open this stuff. But I don't have that anymore. It wouldn't run on a modern Mac anyway. I would have to dig up old hardware, load my files onto that somehow, make it do it. Anyway, the point is, all of this stuff is in danger of lots and lots of it not making it through the generations, because it takes effort to, if you want to make sure all the information you have now survives into next generation, you have to go through it. But, I don't make a habit of looking through my 10-year-old documents to make sure that I can still open them. Most people most people, I'm a pack rat for these kinds of things, but most people don't even bother keeping them. They throw them right in the trash. And the thing is that these are the kinds of things that historians look at later to try to reconstruct the past, and they're just disappearing. And
I don't know. I got, I still got stacks of printouts and stuff saved somewhere around here.
I obviously have stacks of printouts too, but more and more people are living their entire lives online, not printing out all this stuff all the time. And even when they do print out stuff, it's a small portion of it. And certainly, the quote-unquote things that we think are important, that we know are important, okay, we're likely to push those on to the next thing. We're likely to bother and think about those and do something with them. But the things that are going to go missing are the things that we don't know are important now, that we only realize their importance in retrospect many years down the line. And in the old physical world, many of those things would have been shoved in a closet and forgotten about, and then somebody can go dig them up later. In the new world, those things end up on a dead hard drive that's thrown in the trash, if they're even that, if they're not even deleted by the users at the time. And so,
I printed out lots and lots of stuff on that green bar paper, it's like a with a big dot matrix printer. I got to tell you something. I don't have a sheet of that saved. I probably threw all that shit out. It's all gone. I don't know. I'll tell you this.
People have always thrown away lots. People have always thrown away lots of stuff, and the thing is that even the stuff they threw away, people found in landfills and crap, and archaeologists later on down the road. And you're right. People maybe I'm not too horribly worried, because I think enough stuff will survive. In fact, there's probably going to be a glut of information, because frankly,
that's what I'm thinking. We have the totally opposite problem, because it used to be societies where it was so difficult to keep records.
Right. You may well see that whoever is elected president in 2050, you will have the Facebook archives of what they were saying and doing when they were 12.
I'm pretty sure of that.
That's a different kind of problem. But I think it'll probably work out. But at the same time, for me as a person who suffers existential angst every time I pick empty trash on my computer. You know, this kind of thing really bothers me. But yeah, I mean, it's just, the world will adapt.
You know, you want to know how times have changed? You know, I've got my two, you know, let's put it to you this way. 20 years ago, you had 19 years ago, I remember when I first met you, you had this black and white Toshiba laptop. I think it was probably a grayscale screen that it had.
Yep.
Was it even color?
Toshiba T1200 HD, because it had a hard drive.
Yes. That's right, because he actually had a hard drive, because that was...
Or was it? No, it was an HB. H for the hard drive and B for a backlight.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Because it was backlit. Because you know, because I did have a laptop myself, an IBM PC convertible that did not have a backlight, and by the way, did not have a hard drive either. So yes, those are two very momentous things. Right now, on my laptop, on over here, I am watching the Monday Night Football game, which is being broadcast over the internet. Okay, right now, not on regular TV. Okay, mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, are you fucking kidding me? Listen, we've got so much stuff, so much information going through the internet right now, being saved, stored, and everything, that I'm pretty sure that we'll be fine with the amount of information.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I could see that. But, you know, I don't know. You'll gain stuff, you'll lose stuff, as usual. Everything changes, and it's not necessarily bad.
Yep.
Anyway, we're over time, so let's wrap
it
up.
We're over time.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. I should mention, hello to any Googlers who might be out there. Let me try that again. Hello to anybody on their Android phones who might be listening. I've noticed a whole bunch of you guys in the logs recently.
You know, that might have worked better if we said it at the beginning.
Yeah, because everybody's gone by now. Anyway.
We'll remember that for the next time.
Yeah, all you Android Google phone using people, thank you for listening, or at least downloading our stuff. Thanks for everybody else who listened. Send me feedback, abelsmay@abelsmay.com, or post on my blog at abelsmay.com. We'll talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
Blip, 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 blip.
Bye.